Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guests. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, we are happy and proud to have the one and only phenomenal Phil Lander. Phil, how you doing, man?
Oh, great, Matt. Great to hear your voice, man. How you doing?
Doing good, buddy. Missing you, man. Phil and I go...
I know, miss you too, bro.
We go back, what, about 15 years now? Something like that.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking that. Yeah, it's about 15 years that we've known each other.
Yeah, yeah, and... Phil and I have had, ironically enough, our paths never crossed when either of us were involved in wrestling itself, but our paths then crossed because we were both Universal Studio tour guides and had some of the same friends, and was that not one of the best jobs you ever had?
It was one of the most unique jobs I've ever had, I will say that, and the social life was great.
The social life, yes.
But, the amount of memorization and like useless, you know, just like studio bullshit that we had to memorize. I have the memory of a goldfish. I don't know how I memorize that. It's like a telephone book worth of information that you have to learn about the movie industry and like every, you know, movie and TV show and like actor that ever set foot on Universal Studios. It's just like it's really the weirdest job ever.
And communicating all that to someone who only speaks Japanese.
I know, it's crazy. Or having to sign that to people. And I only know one word in sign language.
Which is the middle finger, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Which could kind of take us into... So we know Phil is... obviously, it was a tour guide at Universal Studios, and... I can't remember when I actually met you, Phil. I mean, obviously he was part of XPW.
Raven, I want to say, and it's funny because I think our paths never crossed until around the XPW Cold Day in Hell. I want to say we might have met a little bit before then.
Maybe.
But it's definitely around that.
So it was May 24th, 2008 in Redondo Beach, California. Don't ask me. Yet.
Wow. Yeah, so we were able to pinpoint it to the exact date and location.
I actually remember that day very, very well. You know, in the early 2000s, I was a fan of XPW. It was the shittiest, crappiest thing I've ever seen, but I was thrilled by it. I thought I was addicted.
I resemble that comment.
I was addicted to it. You know, it was really a car wreck that you really want to keep circling around the block to check out.
That's true. I was with you half of the time.
Yes, our guy here, Daryl, he was with me at a lot of XPW shows from the Birmingham High.
No kidding.
We would, you know, after about paying for two shows, we realized that we could just show up 10 minutes after the show started and get in for free. So at that point, I never, ever, ever paid for an XPW show again. There was one point where the person at the door asked me to pay, and while we were walking in, I noticed a black Mercedes that said XPW CEO. And I told the person...
I know that car.
I told the person at the door, I'm a friend of Rod Black's. He invited me. That's his car. I know he's here. We have two comps. And they're like, okay, sir, you're a guest. Have a seat anywhere you want. And we went in.
I remember that.
So, yes, those were the good times of XPW. Went to a lot of sports arena shows. Obviously, we became friends with people, you know, like Kevin Kleinrock and Chris Kloss. And obviously, good boy, Ryan.
Ryan Webb, yeah.
Webb.
Of course.
And, of course, Ryan Katz.
Jimmy. Katz. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all these guys.
Ryan
yeah.
Katz, you know, and it's... How do you feel seeing someone like...
Well, hold on, Raven. I have to interrupt because, you know, you just told that story and you have something in common with Rob Black in that you never put any money in the pockets of wrestlers.
Well, that's awesome. Well, if you want to be honestly, if you want to be really honest, I have another thing coming with Rob Black.
Oh, I've made it explicit.
We're good.
The way he has hooked up his friends in wrestling with porn stars, I have hooked up my friends in wrestling with porn stars. So you know, there's a lot. So you know, I kind of understood Ron Black's mentality at that aspect, but you know,
oh boy,
you coming through there and so forth. What's it like now in 2019 seeing someone like Joey Chaos having his own school, or Ryan Katz, you know, being a producer for the WWE system?
Well, yes, 20 years later, because this is actually, XPW started in 1999, if you can believe it.
Yep.
We're 20 years on. First of all, I couldn't be prouder of Ryan and Joey and Kevin, really. I think those three guys have really, you know, kind of like forged their paths in life, and it all kind of started from the XPW days. I knew Kevin and Joey actually from, you know, much, much earlier before XPW, from the SCCW days. We wrestled at a company called IWF up in Simi Valley in 1998. Strangely, I've never been to the Santino's Brother Wrestling School, but I've heard such great things about it. I follow it on, you know, Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and I see it looks like an amazing school. I see that Brian Kendrick, you know, he trains people out of there weekly. And I listened to your rant on one of the previous episodes, Raven, about the wrestlers not going there is an abomination.
Yep.
I completely agree with you. Like, if there's any wrestlers in the Southern California area listening to this, like, if you're not going to that, like, you're a fool.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and quit trying to convince yourself that you're trying to be a wrestler if you're not doing that, because that's an amazing opportunity, and it just like boggled my mind hearing that. I'm really proud of Joey. I like what he's done. I like the path that he's gone down. From where he was in like 1998 to where he ended up, you know, when he became like, you know, kind of the rock star, the rock superstar, he really made like a 180 degree change. I mean, he was Kid Chaos. You know, when I knew him, he was like this like skinny, scrawny, kind of like almost like a backyard wrestler. He wasn't quite a backyard wrestler, but he kind of like, you know, he was trained by, you guys know Rob Courtney, Craze?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, he was trained by him, like in like a garage on like a, I don't know if this is true, like on like a mattress or trampoline or something. I don't know what the story was. I mean, maybe that's, you know, just, you know, something someone told me. But it was like he kind of came up that way. And you know, Rob's a great guy to train, you know, to learn stuff from. But it wasn't, I don't think it was like really an official like kind of training in a ring. But he, you know, he grew into this a really great wrestler, and it was really nice to see him kind of evolve into this, you know, into that rock superstar persona. Because, you know, I left wrestling for like many years, and like when I came back and I saw him, I was like, whoa, oh my god, Joey's like a legit wrestler now. Like, he could be in the WWE. Like, he could straight up be there. Like, he's got the size for it, he's got the charisma, all that. So it's great that he is kind of giving back, and he's created a successful business at Santino Brothers School, and that he's, you know, he's become a like a real, you know, kind of a mainstay school in the Southern California area. I full disclaimer, that's not this, you know, when I think of the schools in Southern California, I think the jewel is the School of Hard Knocks, which is Jesse Hernandez's school, which is the school that I trained at.
Right.
But we can get to that later. But Joey is an amazing wrestler, and I love like where he's gone with his career, and I love that he's got such an important school and such a meaningful school out here in Southern California. Ryan is another guy that amazingly, like, our paths never crossed at XPW, because I was only in XPW really for the first year that XPW was around, and Ryan didn't come around until probably like the second year that XPW was around. So our paths just like narrowly crossed, and we didn't meet till Cold Day in Hell, and we became like instant friends, like at Cold Day in Hell. And, you know, we were really close. Like when he was out living out here in LA, you know, I used to, you know, like bounce show ideas off him, and, you know, he would help me, he helped me like film, a game show sizzle reel that I did like 10 years ago in my backyard. he was just a guy like you have to go like get drinks with and like just bullshit, and like, you know, we kind of like, you know, bitch and moan and complain about like, oh, wrestling this, and, you know, oh, the entertainment industry this, you know, two like, you know, kind of like, you know, struggling entertainment industry people that hadn't made it, just, you know, kind of like griping and, you know, bitching and moaning. So when it's funny, like, so I started producing, my producing career kind of took off like in the early teens, like probably around 2012, my producing career like kind of took off. And that's around like maybe a year or two later, that's when Ryan got hired with the WWE, and he kind of like took off. So we kind of like, our paths kind of like took off kind of around the same time. And man, I am so proud of that guy. Whenever anyone makes it like that, that's from like our world, whether it's like Matt and I, we know a stand-up comedian, Adam Ray,
yeah,
who like his career's kind of taken off. And like, he's a guy that we've been friends with for like 15 years. And like, he used to be a guy that we would like, you know, go and have drinks with and just bullshit with and play softball with. And then bang, before we knew it, you know, his career took off as a stand-up comic. He started like starring in movies with like Sandra Bullock and stuff. Yeah. And it's like, you know, we don't see him so much anymore. We don't talk to him, but it's like a part of us has made it too, you know, like he's made it, like we've made it, you know? And I feel that way with Ryan. Like Ryan's like kind of made it. It's like a part of us has made it, you know, part of us, of the guys that like have wrestled and like helped make SoCal wrestling have made it. And I feel that way whenever I see anyone, like a wrestler that's made it. Like, even, I didn't really know John Cena when he was out here. But I remember when he was signed, it was like, oh my God, it's so cowboy. Just got signed by the WWE. And then bang, he turned into like the biggest thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it feels so great. It's not, this isn't like some guy from like, you know, a state we've never heard of, or from like, you know, 3,000 miles away. This is a guy from like our backyard that made it.
Yeah.
And it's such a nice feeling to have that. One of my real good friends, you know, was Rico Constantino. And like, you know, he was like kind of like in the WWE for like, you know, a minute. And
he was in there for a good point. You know, I mean,
yeah.
He obviously,
yeah, for what, like 2 years he was there?
Yeah, obviously the whole 3 minute warning thing, and obviously
Billy and Chuck,
yeah.
But you know, talking about, you know, guys from XPW, you know, who have gone on to certain things, you know, it's interesting how they have all connected to the WWE at some point, you know, and still currently, you know, you do have Chaos, who has his school, which, you know, I know Canyon Seaman and William Regal visit quite often. Obviously, it's the location where Ronda Rousey, you know, began training along with Jessamyn, right, and Shayna.
And so Eva Marie.
Eva Marie, of course. And yep. I know a few others that aren't public have started, you know, doing training there and so forth. So, you know, Joey has, you know, kind of his connections to the WWE. And then you have Ryan Katz, who is obviously a WWE employee. And then there's another person from XPW who also has a lot of connection to WWE, and that's Luke Hawks, you know, who has his own school and a very successful promotion in New Orleans. And, you know, going from Ultra Boy Luke in XPW to, you know, where he's at now, Mr. Big Fucking Arms. I mean, it's like, you know, he is doing very well, you know. Did you ever have any connections to Luke during your time? I mean, I know Luke was at the Cold Day in Hell.
He didn't. You know, the first time I ever met him was at Cold Day in Hell. And, you know, first impressions are so important. And my first impression of him was like, it could not have been more positive. He came up to me and he treated me with such like reverence. He shook my hand. He acted like he knew me. Like he was like an old friend of mine. He goes, "Phil, hey man, it's great to see you. How you doing?" And, he treated me with such respect, and like, he didn't have to, because I'm not like, I'm a veteran, but like, I stopped wrestling full time like 15 years ago, you know, like I'm basically a nobody. So I always like, I love it when any wrestler like has that old school, like mentality of treating veterans with respect, no matter who they are.
Well, the thing is too, Phil, and I think this is where you don't give yourself enough credit, as long as I've known you. I think that this is one of the most humble things about you, and that is you do have to realize that you are out there, and a lot of these younger guys who, you know, came up after you, they were watching those DVDs, man. You know, they watched the product and they saw you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people...
Okay, so that I know. This is... All right, so here's the part where I'm not going to be humble, okay? I think, and I will argue this with most wrestling people. I think that the current state of wrestling evolved from Southern California in the late 90s and early 2000s. I have been saying this for 2 decades, that there was a SoCal style of wrestling. And it was a blend of lucha, it was a blend of Japanese strong style, and it was, you know, American, you know, traditional and hardcore. It was all four of those styles kind of blending together, all in the late 90s, all like with this like weird group of guys in SoCal that were like kind of embracing it and doing it. And it's not that, you know, hardcore wasn't being embraced by other parts of the country, or that, you know, strong style wasn't embraced by other parts of the country, but like lucha, strong style, hardcore, it all kind of came together in SoCal. At least that's what I saw.
I think you're right on the button with that. And I want to say that personally, to me, I think one common thread that we can pretty much all agree, I would assume, if you were a wrestler in Southern California between 1998 and, let's say, 2008, I think the main string there is everyone somehow either wrestled or was trained by Chris Daniels. Christopher Daniels is definitely, and he's everything you just said. He's still doing it today. I mean, it's amazing. Yeah,
that was the next words about to come out of my mouth.
Yep.
was the patron saint of like modern wrestling is literally the fallen angel Christopher Daniels. I mean, that dude, he like single-handedly trained me, like pretty much at Jesse's school.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I was there with him. I used to go out there. I used to drive out to San Bernardino 3 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week. And there would be days that like, and this is in the late 90s when like wrestling schools were not popular. Like you would only get like 5, maybe 10 if you were lucky, like students. Now, like you go to a wrestling school, there's like, it's like a line out the door of people like, you know, trying to train.
Right.
But then like there would be days like where it would just be me and Chris, the only two people in the wrestling school. Can you imagine like looking back on this now, there's like young wrestlers thinking, oh my God, what I would give to have like one-on-one training from Christopher Daniels, yep, like 3 days a week for like, yep, an entire year. And that's kind of like what I had, because Chris had this mentality, like he was like a hardcore trainer. Like he trained all the time. And like, it was just when I was coming up and I was really lucky. And that was like, you know, the year that I was training and, you know, making sure that I was focused and dedicated and I was doing it. I got that rub, man. I was really, really lucky. And I would not have been the wrestler that I was had it not been for the physical and mental lessons that he taught me.
That's
I would attribute like the majority of my training. Well, if not to Jesse, then definitely to Chris Daniel. I mean, he taught me so much.
When you started,
my second match was against Chris.
When you started with XPW, can you remember like who was on the roster at that time?
I can tell you almost everyone. The very first show, it was me against Johnny Webb, and it's funny because Johnny Webb was like, he was like my Phenomenal Phil's arch nemesis. So like my character was like a mix between Mr. Perfect and Owen Hart. Like that's just kind of like, you know, the real cocky, like kind of underdog with a chip on his shoulder. Like that was me. And so it was like perfect to go up against, you know, white trash Johnny Webb. Like he was like, I was the perfect foil for him. He was the perfect foil for me. It just, it was good. All right, but to answer your question, there was Dynamite D, there was Sybil slash, you know, Uncle Jess Hansen. There was, you know, the West Siders, which was, you know, one of my best friends, Big Q, Big Rot, and the Iceman, John Black, who, Chronic, I think was his name. What was the other tag team that was there? Obviously, the real deal, Damian Steele, Tim Fisher. Big Dick Dudley was the big name from ECW that we brought in.
Because I'm trying to get to a certain person to see if you have an answer.
There was Byron, Chronic.
Was Angel on the roster?
Angel was not on the roster.
All right, because
it's another guy like who I never crossed paths with until Cold Day in Hell.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm still in the debate in my own mind of the Angel character.
Whether he's straight or not.
Correct.
I'm 90% sure he's straight, but I don't know. I don't hang out with the guy enough.
Are you kidding me? He's straight. He's the greatest actor of all time. Better than Tom
Hanks.
Well,
I know straight guys that have done gay gimmicks, and they're straight. I don't know. They there might be a little bit of, reading between the sheets, but I don't know if I don't know. Like, I don't know the guy. I know he's a cool dude.
He's great. So more about XPW. There was a famous night. I mean, obviously there were many famous nights in XPW, and I'm not talking about the locker room where Rob Black would pay people with porn stars. But where were you on the night of? I don't remember the date, so don't quote me on this. Okay. But the ECW pay-per-view at the Grand Olympic Auditorium. Were you in the building? Were you? What do you remember that day?
I remember it actually very well. I had already left XPW at the time, so I was not affiliated with them. And it's a really weird story. So one of my best friends, he wanted to go. He wanted to go to the pay-per-view, and I was like, this was during like a time when I had like kind of sworn off wrestling. I'd like taken a year off, and I was like, you know, I need to focus on school. I need to get, like, you know, graduate on time and, like, not, you know, cost my parents any more money in college. But he wanted to go to the CCW pay-per-view, so I was like, all right, I'll go with you. And we sat, coincidentally, right next to Kevin Kleinrock and Big Q and Chronic and, like, the whole XPW, like, roster. But it was not, like, down ringside. We were, like, up on the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like saying hi. I was like, oh man, it's so great. You know, we're sitting next to each other. It's so cool. Like, and
was Dynamite D in that section?
Dynamite D was there. Yes.
Okay. And I sat
Jimmy was there.
I sat right in front of Dynamite D.
Oh, so you know what I'm talking about? That, like,
yeah,
the balcony.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the entire time Kevin is on the phone with Rob Black, the entire time, during the entire pay-per-view, he's on his cell phone, you know? And then, you know, obviously down at ringside, there was like Supreme and Christy Mist and
Tim was down there because he was the champ at the time. Because I was in the building too. we all kind of were in the same place at the same time for this one.
And so when the whole brouhaha happened, when like I don't even remember what happened. I think someone was like holding up an XPW sign, and then Christy Minnis was like trying to take off her top. I don't know what was going on, man. And then like I just remember Francine got all up in their faces and was it looked like Francine took a swing at like Christy Minnis. And then the whole like ECW locker room like cleared out, and like Supreme is like he's a small guy, but he's tough as fucking nails, man. Like he's like one of the toughest men that I've like ever known. He just like it seemed like he was like took like straight up swings at like I don't know whoever was down there, Tommy Dreamer or you know I don't know Shane Douglas, whoever was down there, and then the entire locker cleared out to like. Even like Paul Heyman, you can see Paul Heyman like running down there, like everyone like ran down there, and the whole brawl like went out to the street.
Right.
And I turn over and I see Kevin is obviously being yelled, screamed at by Rob Black on the phone, and like the whole aisle of like my XPW friends like all cleared out, like they all like ran outside to go out to this. Whatever like street brawl that was going on, I didn't see the street brawl. I had like sworn off it, and obviously there was like all these XPW fans that were asking me what was going on, and I was like, I don't know, I don't have anything to do with it. Like I'm not associated with them anymore.
Yeah, actually, and, I followed it outside, I saw a lot of it. I remember there were two girls who were on the street team for XPW, and they were actually.
The air quote street team.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
which okay. literally no, in XPW terms meant street walking team.
Right? No, they no. Trust me, if they were street walkers, I would have kept my car driving past them. But they were at a lot of shows. But I remember both of them getting hit in the face by certain ECW talent. Because
who did it?
Yeah, we're not going there. Come on,
they're not listening. Come on.
Yeah, who knows? Hey, this is a big broadcast. They could be listening.
Thank
this
you.
This is bigger than JR's barbecue or whatever.
All right,
I remember the brawl. And honestly, you say Kevin was on the phone with because I actually know Kevin was, I believe, on the phone with Rod Black. It's funny to think cell phones were around back then, but
It was like the only person I knew with a cell phone.
Yeah.
Rob Black at the time.
And a limo pulls up, and the door opens, and it's Rob Black, and I believe someone else was in it. But Rob Black is in the limo, and a lot of the XPW guys jump in the limo, and they take off. But like, there's really a brawl on the street, like in the back of the
auditorium. It was in the back of the, yeah.
Yeah, right where the freeway exit is. And it was crazy. And the one thing that I remember, I don't know why this vividly sticks out in my mind, but one of the guys, the security guys who wears the bright yellow jackets, like he's looking at everyone. He's like, I'm going to lock this fucking door and none of you guys can get back in here to watch the show. And I'm like, well, fuck, I came to see ECW, not this bullshit. So I ran right back into the building, you know, and, you know, it was the main event. From what happened, I remember it was Dreamer, Francine, and Justin Credible were in the ring about to do a ladder match. Yeah. Someone from XPW stood up. Francine caught them trying to distract the show. Dreamer said something. Justin said something. The ref says something.
Yep.
And then I remember Chris Kloss ends up with his shirt off.
Right.
And I'm like, Supreme.
Oh, yeah, Chris Kloss.
Supreme isn't a wife beater, but Chris Kloss has his shirt off. What's going on here? And, you know, it was a very memorable night. I believe the pay-per-view is actually on the network, the WWE network.
Yes,
and
it is.
That segment is still in the show. So,
hysterical.
Yeah, it was very funny. Now I know.
Can you imagine if smartphones were around then? And everyone had their smartphones and were filming that.
I would
pay anything to see video footage of that.
It would have been the first time XPW ever trended in their life. But
and I think that's where Rob Black screwed up. Then if he was just videotaping like from that limo, oh my god, it would have been so great.
Well, I mean, it's talking about you know hidden footage from XPW. I mean. Going back to the high school in Northridge where they ran the shows, I forgot the name, Birmingham High. You know, I may or may not have snuck a video camera into quite a few shows and recorded
a
lot of stuff.
I know.
Smart enough to when the video camera was once being confiscated by security, smart enough to fast forward the tape all the way so far to when they tried to rewind and look for footage, they realized it was blank. And like, no, you dummies, I fast forwarded. I didn't like, I wasn't going to rewind the tape to show you that I actually had footage. And they were like, oh, you didn't record anything. Just put the camera back in your bag. I'm like, all right, you dumbasses. And, you know, it went from there. But yeah, I have tons of footage. You know, I even tried to sell it to Klein Rock, but he was Jewing me and would not give me any lowball figure on this footage here for the Best of XPW Season 4 DVD. So,
and this is the first time.
Raven, you're the most interesting man in wrestling.
Yeah.
I just wanted to let you know, like, we need to do a documentary about you. Like, seriously. About you and your life.
I actually had someone hit me up the other day and he DM'd me and was like, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, you know, that's a good question. He's like, you're always in first class and you're always at a WWE event. Like, I'm like, well I mean, I don't know. I just enjoy life. But no, I really need to find this XPW footage because I think I can get some money out of Klein Rock this time. But
not after you just said he Jewed you.
Oh, well, you know, I
this is the last time we're probably going to get on.
I know. What year is this? It's 2019, right?
Seriously.
That word still exists? Well, I mean, geez. Give me a break.
Well, there goes all my hookups now.
dang, man.
Yeah.
Man, you just shot yourself in the foot.
No,
man.
we're going to have Klein Rock on the show. And I'll apologize to him. I'll, you know, do a meet and greet or whatever.
It's okay.
But also, so we, you know, you've gone on to do other stuff in pro wrestling. Ironically, everywhere you work, there's always controversy with where you work
everywhere.
Where I show up at.
And we just scratched the tip of the iceberg on XPW.
Oh yeah,
if we're moving off of XPW, like,
yeah, because
there's so much.
There's
I could write a book about 4 months in XPW
episodes. But you were once working with Dave Marquez. He gave you a lovely jacket, and I believe you know, you had your hair done very well. And
I still have.
You still have the hair.
With the NWA patch on it. I don't have the hair up.
Oh, I was going to say you did. No, because I remember it was at one studio. I can't remember. I want to say the CBS studios.
CBS Columbia Square.
Yes.
On Hollywood. And, is it Hollywood? Yeah, Hollywood and... No, Sunset and...
Yeah. It was
and
right...
Like Ivar.
It was right across from Roscoe's.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dave did a few tapings there, and you were one of the commentators, I believe.
Yeah, it was me and Todd Kennelly.
Yeah, he did some tapings there, and I remember seeing you there in a lovely jacket.
Well, it was the show that he has on now, NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. It was the pilot, so we did a whole weekend of pilot tapings. We taped like 4 episodes. It was with the Young Bucks.
Yeah, the Bucks were there because I remember. After
the American Dragon, Brian Danielson.
Yeah.
Like some guy I swear to God I'd never heard of. I was like, who the hell is that guy? And Todd Kennelly's like, just so you know, this guy's like the biggest name on the independent scene right now. And like he gave me this like whole like spiel on like on who Brian Danielson was. Because like I was kind of like, and this is why I did not maintain my position as the commentator for NWA Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, because I was like kind of like out of the loop, you know, so I didn't really... I wasn't probably the best person for the job. So like Todd had to like kind of like fill me in on, you know, who some of these people were.
Can you fill in Simon Street here on who exactly Brian Danielson became?
Oh wow, cuz I don't
Well,
know.
Brian Danielson is an anagram for one of the most popular wrestlers in in the world, and that is Daniel Bryan.
Wow, yeah. I had no idea, man. Thank you so
what,
much.
What, are you Michaels. Kidding me, really?
No, absolutely not.
All right, yeah, man, I had no fucking idea, man. I was like, trust me, I was out of wrestling, like, yeah. You know, and Dave Marquez was like, you know, he saw me at like Cold Day in Hell and was like, hey, man, you know, we need a play-by-play guy, and like, you know, right now I'm the color guy, and like, I can't do color. So, like, I went in, I did my best Bobby Heenan, you know, Jesse Ventura imitation.
You have that Marquez look. You have the look that Marquez likes.
Yeah. Right, like yeah. Well, you
know, as far as like, you know, his type of, you know, announcers and so forth, you know, Phil fit that, you know, that look. And
it's funny you say that, because like I was talking with Johnny Webb, like, I don't know, a couple years ago, and he was like, he was mentioning Stu Stone, and I'm like, who's Stu Stone? He's like, wait a minute, you don't know who Stu Stone is? I'm like, no. He's like, he's the commentator for Championship Wrestling. I was like, oh, yeah, and I never met him. He's like, wait a minute. You've never met Stu Stone? The guy's like your twin. I was like, boy, I don't know this guy. Like, he's like, it's impossible. I said, yeah, no, I never met him. And, and then I ended up learning, yeah, he's the guy that replaced me. So clearly I fit the mold of, like, whatever Dave Marquez looks for in a commentator.
So
it was a bummer, though. Like, I really enjoyed doing it, and I wish I was, like, more current at the time. And that I could have been a better, like, commentator, because I would have. That's like my dream job, is being a commentator. So,
and you were good at it too.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you were.
I remember the notes that he gave me. the big note that Dave Marquez gave me. It sounds like the note that, like, WNBC would give Howard Stern, like, back in the '80s. It was like, don't root for the bad guys so much. I was like, oh, come on, man. Like, that's like the whole, you know, I thought that was like, it was fun and funny. And I had written so many good, like, barbs and zingers. But it's, you know, that kind of humor is not Dave Marquez's style at all.
No.
You know, he likes things very, like,
straight,
you know, Disney and straight. Exactly.
Yeah. So
I guess my style didn't really gel with him.
Now, I know at one point, I can't remember what promotion you were doing. A Vince McMahon character.
That was XPW called Day in Hell. Yeah, that was.
Now, you did it more than once, correct?
I did it. Let's see. I did it.
Because you did it in
MPW. I brought it.
Didn't you do it in MPW?
I brought it back. I did it for Ryan Katz's his Fit Pit shows.
Okay,
I did it for
right.
those.
That's where
yeah,
I saw.
Yeah, that was just like kind of small stuff.
Yeah.
And then, like, I felt like it had kind of like taken on a life of its own. So I kind of had to, when I did my MPW shows, I kind of had to, like, embrace it a little bit. And so I changed, like, the character I did for Cold Day in Hell was Philip K. McPhenom, which was a spoof on Vincent K. McMahon, mm-hmm. you know, and I owned the WE instead of the WWE, you know, and of course WE is Women's Entertainment. And you know, the whole angle of Cold Day in Hell was the WE was going to buy XPW and take over XPW. So that was like the whole gimmick. And it took on like this life of its own. Like people really dug this, like, Vince McMahon, like, impression, which, it's not an impression of Vince McMahon. It's actually an impression of Chris Kloss doing an impression of Vince McMahon. Like,
yeah,
that's how it
nice.
Started. So it's, you know, I don't know if Raven's laughing, but, like, if you know Chris Kloss.
Chris Kloss,
you know,
yeah.
Like,
yeah. Now, I never knew that, but now it makes sense. And it's funny because I remember seeing a lot of the footage and so forth, but I think this... This had to be around the MySpace days, correct?
Oh, 100%.
Well, it was like the dying day of MySpace and the creation of Facebook.
Yeah, the swan song of MySpace.
But most of it was on MySpace. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
And there is some of it out there on YouTube still.
Oh, I'm sure a ton of it's out on YouTube. I mean, it's XPW. I mean, no one's going to buy it, so you watch it for free. Jeez. I'm gonna pay for that crap.
So, Phil, can we get a little Mr. McPhenom?
Well, here we are talking to Matt and Raven, and this podcast sucks. You guys can't kiss my ass. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, this is like, it's just like the basic, you know. You just gotta go into that low register, and everything is Cold Day in Hell. Kiss my ass. You know, it's everything is kind of like drawn out and like really like over dramatic. Whatever you're saying is like big, over dramatic, like the eyebrows going up, you know. And
I think the funniest.
Just imagine me with gray streaks and gray paint in my hair.
I was just going to say the funniest thing about the character was here is a. You know, what at that point, probably early 30s, late 20s, young
late
man.
20s.
Yeah. who's healthy and in the best shape, and yet he's got the most ridiculous gray fucking streaks in his hair. It looks so much like McMahon in his ridiculousness. It was so great,
dude. And even me, man, I was in pretty good shape. I wasn't nearly as yoked as Vince, man. Right. I was like, oh man,
Ultimate dude, Warrior never like, was. Come on,
dude. He was bigger than Warrior. I'm impressed with Vince, man.
He was bigger than Warrior.
That dude, he's.
So
he's incredible.
I have a question for you.
What's so cool about that is like, it was such a good like character that I created. Like they stuck me with X-Pac. Like I did a whole like thing with X-Pac.
They did. I remember that.
Like, and I was like, dude, this is like it's pretty cool. Like I'm obviously doing. I'm obviously like on the right track with this. So
I have a X-Pac story from XPW. Where was it? There was like one venue you guys had where it was just like mud, like there was no concrete. Like the ring was in mud.
You know, I wasn't.
Oh no, no, you weren't there. I know what you're talking about. It was the X Park, the X Park, yeah. And we were there at a show, and X Pac was on. This was like right, you know, recently from freshly released from wherever he was released from. And I was standing at the entrance, and I had a sign that said WWE and the arrow pointing the other way, not towards the ring, but the opposite way of the ring, saying that he would have to turn around if he wanted to go to the WWE and instead of going into the crappy XPW ring. So he did not take too likely to this sign. And I believe Justin Credible was on the show, and Justin came out and tore my sign up. And I worked really hard on making this sign. I was just trying to guide him to the right... the right direction, you know.
You were being nice.
I was being very nice. You know?
You were giving advice.
Yeah. I have a question. When's the last...
Hey, I would say this. X-Pac, one of the nicest guys I've ever met in wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
One of the coolest fucking dudes. He's, like, so chill and just, like, such a good guy, nice guy.
Very
just
chill.
I want to say that. Like,
very chill. Yeah. Yeah. There's reasons. When's the last wrestling show you've been to? Wow.
Good question.
Wow.
Hmm.
PCW?
That's definitely the last show I worked. What was the last wrestling show I've been to?
Well, it's one of those things. You are, at this point, almost, can we say, divorced from the business in a sense. You've kind of moved on into bigger, better venues, so you don't keep up as much, right?
I hate saying that. I hate saying like, oh, I've moved on, or you know, it's not like I'm divorced from it. I love it. You know, I still go to like Cauliflower Alley and stuff. You know, I love, you know, tuning in and watching, you know, and you know, following you know, what guys like, you know, what's happening with like Roman Reigns, and, you know, I love following The Rock's career and, you know, seeing what's going on with Batista. I mean, I love following wrestling. I saw a real bad side of wrestling when I was in it. I saw a lot of really good people kind of like be destroyed by wrestling.
Right.
And it kind of like, you know, it kills the allure, you know, when you start doing what you love, like, you know, when you do your hobby for work, for a living, it really kind of like fucks it up for you.
Right.
You know, it really kind of makes it, it kind of like makes you jaded on it.
It's almost like being hired by Santa.
Yeah.
Wait, being hired by who?
Santa.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, it's funny. I was talking with a friend last night about wrestling, and, he said he and so this is not my quote, this is someone else's quote. He was like, yeah, it's like eating candy. Now, you can't eat candy. You can't have a steady diet of candy. You know, you're going to get sick. You're going to, you know, it's not going to work out well for you. Like, candy is good once in a while, you know? And I feel like that's what kind of like happened with me with wrestling. Like, I loved it so much growing up. I was like so into it. And then like, you know, I was like, I had tunnel vision when I was wrestling. Like, it was like all I cared about. Even when I was in college, like, I didn't even give a shit about college. I was like,
when am I going to go? When am I going to go wrestle again? Like, I was like working out all the time. I was like, when am I going to go wrestle again? I was like, you know, buying my merchandise and like getting, you know, getting my t-shirts ready and getting my, you know, I was like,
so,
you know,
explain a little bit, because to give a better perspective to someone who doesn't live in California, give the perspective of what you were actually doing at the time you were in college and then training at the same time, even before going on to the next phase, which would be living out of your car, essentially, you know, going across the state of California. But how long were you going distance wise from college to train?
Okay. So, I live, you know, I grew up in Sherman Oaks, and, you know, from my parents' house to San Bernardino, which is where Jesse's school is, the School of Hard Knocks, it was a 75-mile drive. Okay. And so I made, during the summer between high school ending and college starting, I trained 3 to 4 days a week, every day, out in San Bernardino. So I was driving out there 75 miles one way, 75 miles back, you know, 3 to 4 days a week.
And you're at and at this point you're like 18 years old.
Yeah, I was 18, you know, and like, it's funny. Like, let me create this. So, you know, I grew up, you know, watching wrestling, and like, I listened to Dynamite D on CRN, the cable radio network, you know, his show Wrestle Talk. And that like was what really introduced me to, the world of indie wrestling. And it, you know, so I was like 12 years old and I was like listening to him and I was like, oh my God, there's indie wrestling. Like, that sounds so cool. Like, I want to do that one day. And so I made a promise to myself that like, when I graduated high school, I would have at least one wrestling match. So my opportunity to do that was the summer between graduating high school and going to college. So it was that summer in 1997 that I was, you know, I was training like, you know, every day out in San Bernardino with like Christopher Daniels. And like, that's where I got like that big, you know, like training from Chris.
Right.
And like right before college started, I had my first match. Like, it was like late August. So I got my first match in like 2 months. I got pretty good, pretty quick at it, you know, and most people don't do that. Like, right. Most people, it takes like 2 years to get your first match, not 2 months.
Right.
So I was like in really, really good shape because I played high school football. I kind of like, you know, become a good athlete. And so I started wrestling at the end of August, and then like beginning of September, poof, I had to move up to college. And that was up in Santa Barbara at UCSB, which was 90 miles from my parents' house in Sherman Oaks. And so when you add the 90 miles from college to my parents' house and then 75 miles from my parents' house to the School of Hard Knocks, that's 165 miles that oftentimes I would have to drive just to get out there to train.
Right.
And like, there were some alternatives to try. Like, I could have trained at Slammers, but I wasn't really, I had seen like a Slammer show and I wasn't really too impressed with that. And I'd heard some things about Slammers that maybe it wasn't the best place to train. And I was in with the School of Hard Knocks and with Jesse and with Bill Anderson at the time. And that's where I was learning. That's where I was getting booked. So I wrestled for Jesse's promotion, the EWF, for 6 months. And then, fortunately a promotion started in Simi Valley, which was a lot closer to where I was going to school.
Right.
That was like maybe 80 miles from where I was going to school. So I was able to wrestle in Simi Valley every 2 weeks, and I started training out there, which kind of like was able to cut my drive time down. But yeah, there was a, you know, 6 month period where I was putting on some serious mileage on my car, like just, you know, driving. But you know, when you're 18 and there's something you really want to do in life, like nothing can stop you. You know, when you've got like tunnel vision and you want to do something, you do it. And that goes back to like what Raven was talking about with Brian Kendrick, you know, training people out in Santino. Right. Like, if you want to do this, if you want to make a career out of this, and you're not
putting in those kind of sacrifices, like, you might as well pack it up, man. You know, you got to be willing to go all the way, go the total distance to
so,
do this.
So then eventually you move on to getting enough of an establishment where you end up in Northern California with, rest in peace, good old Roland Alexander.
Roland.
Who
was
featured a little bit in Beyond the Mat.
Beyond the Mat.
Uh-huh. But everything now, I've come kind of missed Mike Modest over the years. When I was in UPW, he was down there a little bit, but I didn't really get to know him. And I know Mike is, from all accounts, from everyone, he's a really good guy.
Great guy. I think he's in Vegas, isn't he?
Could be. Could be. We're gonna have to look that one up.
Yeah, I think he relocated to Vegas. You gotta look him up.
Yeah. And so Mike is a great example of someone who spent a lot of time with Roland up there. What was it like in the short term just having to go through Roland's world of wrestling, which is kind of a little different than everyone else's world of wrestling?
I mean, look, I love Roland, God bless his soul. The guy, you know, he's one of these guys that was like Rob Black, who not the easiest person to deal with, but he had a vision. And, you know, God help anyone that stands in the way of their vision. You know, like, they will do anything to see their vision through. And there's a lot of people out here that have visions that don't see them through. You know, and there's certain people that do. And, like, say what you want about Rob Black, and, like, I'm not the biggest fan of Rob Black, but one thing I'll always say a positive about him is that that's a guy, he wanted to do something, and he fucking did it, you know? And not everyone can do that. And Roland, very similar. Like, he had a vision, he wanted to do some things, and, you know, he did it. And he had his wrestling promotion that he did his way. And, you know, it's kind of like Dave Marquez. Like, even Dave Marquez, say what you want about him, he's got a vision, he does things his way, and no one's going to get in his way. He's going to do things his way. And, like, yeah, there's going to be haters, and people can talk shit about him, and people can say X, Y, and Z, but whatever. You know, he's doing his thing.
So then I guess the biggest take that I think any wrestler can get is, in any situation, you want to learn something at least. Was there any lessons that you learned that stuck out from someone like, you know, Roland, or from even, you know, Rob, or just, you know, was there a life lesson that you took from working with these larger than life personalities?
Get everything in writing. Get everything.
I can understand that.
Get everything in writing. And double and triple check and quadruple check your work and what they say, and make sure you're doing everything according to plan, and make sure you get paid at the end of the day. I think that's actually, sorry, there's a plane going overhead. That's actually the most important lesson I think that any wrestler, really, just any person can learn. Is know what you're worth and make sure that you get paid for it. And that's something that Jesse Hernandez and Bill Anderson taught me from day one, is that you do not wrestle for free ever. Mm-hmm. Like, right. even if it's only $5, even if it's like, you know, you're just getting a meal, you get something. You do not work for free, because once people know that you work for free, you're never going to get paid.
It's
never. And they're never going to respect you. They're never going to treat you properly. And I took this lesson into the professional world too, is that, you know, you got to tell people what you're worth. And once you've got a rate set, you can't really work under that, because then people get used to paying you that rate, that lowered rate, and then you're screwed. So
especially you have to really, in this current era of pro wrestling, is mainly 2019, you know, with so many free agents coming around, but also with so many companies starting up and so many companies boasting that they've sold their front row, their first three rows of tickets, and tickets are going fast. You know, I laugh when I see a promoter say, oh, first two rows are sold out, tickets are going fast, and then it's like someone works a show for free. because the promoter couldn't pay them. I'm like, why are you posting that your front rows are selling out, but you can't pay the talent? Like, you know, and I see that a lot in SoCal, which is why, you know, I have my feelings about a lot of people in SoCal that really aren't too positive feelings.
Promoters have reputations for being liars and cheaters. You know, I mean, it sucks. I mean, I don't know how it is now, but like that's what it was when I was wrestling, is, you know, never trust a promoter, you know, and like be prepared to get stabbed in the back, be prepared to get screwed. It was like almost every promoter, you know, on some level was going to do that to you.
Yeah, I still see it a lot. I still see people post about it on Facebook, and I'm like, wow, like it's crazy.
I would never want to be a promoter, by the way. I mean, I tried promoting a show once, actually, when I was in college back in, this was like in 2000. This was like 19 years ago. I tried promoting a show, and just the cost was astronomical. Like, to, you know, in between getting insurance and renting a venue and paying your talent and, you know, hiring employees. I was like, there's no way. There's absolutely no way that I'm not going to lose money. Like, forget breaking even. And making a profit,
yeah, which is something
I'm not going to lose money.
Something we spoke about earlier about, you know, certain new promotions that are starting up. You know, even though the owners may be billionaires, it's like, you know, it costs a lot to start a new promotion or even to maintain a promotion. But before I don't know how much time we have left, but there's something other stuff I wanted to talk to you about. Beyond the wrestling, I know you ventured into the world of reality television. There was what show were
still
you
there?
You still are. What shows have you worked on in the past and currently?
Well, you know, I think I work on a lot of developmental projects, but I would say the two big shows that I've worked on for a couple of years were American Ninja Warrior and Guinness World Records, and those were kind of like my bread and butter shows for a couple years.
Hate to jump in real quick, but so American Ninja Warrior, do you know Casey?
Yeah, I do.
The girl
Catanzaro, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you work on her episode or?
Yeah. No, well, not that one big famous one that she did, but I worked with her the seasons prior when she did not make it through the course. She was the girlfriend of like one of our top stars, Brent Stephenson. And, you know, it's funny. I don't know what happened, but I don't know, 5 years ago or something, like Ryan Katz called me and he goes, hey man, you know, this is when Casey went viral for, you know, being the first woman to complete the Ninja Warrior course. So Ryan calls me and goes, hey man, you know, we're looking for this Casey Catanzaro girl. We want Casey to be, you know, to come and, you know, be in NXT. And I was like, all right, you know, cool. I'll give them a call and I'll see if they're interested. So I called Brent, her boyfriend, and I was like, hey dude, WWE called me and asked if Casey wants to be in the WWE. And Brent was like, oh, sure, yeah, no problem. I'll ask her. And he asked her and she said no, you know, because you know how it is, like, oh, you know, when to a lot of like outsiders, you know, when they hear like WWE, like wrestling, they're like, I don't want to be involved with wrestling, you know, until they really like kind of like dip their toe into it and like really understand it. So when I reached out to her, the answer was no. And then like a year or two later, I saw an article saying like, oh, American Ninja Warrior phenom Casey Catanzaro is now, you know, signed with WWE. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? When did that happen? So I guess Ryan was able to reach out to them, you know, some other way, like, I don't know, a couple months later, and she did want to do it. So,
yeah, she's...
That was my story.
She's pretty, not to use a word you know often, but she's pretty phenomenal.
She's an amazing athlete. She's amazing.
Her ring entrance is, you know... amazing. I've never seen anyone, you know, it's pretty creative the way she enters the ring. So yeah, you did American Ninja Warrior and you said what was the other show?
Guinness World Records.
Yeah,
I did a couple seasons of that.
You were doing that. I saw a lot of that on your Facebook feed and so on. So, mm-hmm.
And that's how I actually got connected with Sin Bodhi, who runs Freak Show Wrestling out in Vegas, and I produced a show sizzle reel for him couple years ago, and I tried to get his Freak Show Wrestling on TV. And you know, it's funny, to this day, I'm still trying to get Freak Show Wrestling on the TV, because I think that with the reemergence of GLOW and with Women of Wrestling, kind of like and Lucha Underground, I feel like there's a market for this niche kind of not sideshow, but just like fringe wrestling. I feel like there's a market for it, and it's really hard to convince production companies and networks to take a risk on that.
We'll have to talk, brother, because I might have a source, a producer who might be interested in something like that.
A guy who knows a guy. All right.
Yep.
It is tough nowadays. It's because you have to realize network execs may not know too much about wrestling, and the only thing they do know about wrestling is WWE. So if it doesn't look like WWE, they have no interest, and the only reason they may know
about, you have to educate them.
Yeah. And especially being in LA, you can go to the Staples Center for any WWE event and see so many network execs there because their kids are fans, over Survivor Series weekend, that building was full of Fox people that work at Fox because, Fox and Staples Center has, a connection, and obviously WWE moving to Fox, there were a lot of tickets that were given to the company. So, it's hard to convince a network exec of, hey, pick up the show that's shot in a garage. And they're like, well, how come it can't be in a 12,000 seat arena like WWE is? And so it's all about educating them and so on. Mm-hmm. I do see a lot on your Facebook page that you frequent concerts at the Forum. What's the last concert you've been at?
All the time. All right. Well, the last one I went to was Fleetwood Mac, but that's not really. No. Actually, hold on. The last one I went to was Ozzfest.
Yeah, I was just going to say you were at Ozzfest.
That's more indicative of the kind of concerts I go to.
Yeah.
That was on New Year's. I celebrated New Year's with Ozzy Osbourne. It was pretty sweet.
Interesting. And there's always a certain beautiful female by your side. Same person, not different, not different ones. And don't want to get you in trouble. Same one. Is this the girlfriend, the wife? What are we?
It's my fiance.
The fiance.
My fiance, Melissa. Yeah.
Oh. So
yeah, I'm a very, very lucky man.
So Phil, you definitely are. Knowing you for as long as I've known you, man. Melissa is, an angel sent to you, man. And I'm very, very proud.
Doll.
Yeah, very, very proud and happy for you guys.
Thank you.
The question that I would have is, are there any lessons that you've learned?
She does not have a sister, dude. Sorry.
that was actually my question. It wasn't Matt's question. That was my question.
Raven was kind of drilling over there.
All right.
No, is there anything you've learned, any lessons that you could take, even from your parents, from your professional life, anything that will help you transition into having a successful marriage and relationship for, hopefully what will be the rest of your guys' lives?
Well, I'm going to tell you the most important lesson I learned through wrestling, and it's something that you can, I'm going to tell you the two most important lessons I learned in wrestling, and you can apply these to every aspect of your life, okay? And number one, and this is a lesson that I learned on my own, you can't ever tell an audience what to think, ever.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the rule number one that every wrestler, young wrestler, needs to know, that it doesn't matter how smart you are, how good of a wrestler you are, how great you are. Like, if you're trying to get something out of an audience, out of a wife, out of a boss, out of a friend, you got to work with them. You can't just tell them what to think. You can never, ever, ever tell an audience what to think. And I think that's where, you watch, everyone's a critic of wrestling, that's kind of the beauty of wrestling. And everyone always, complains, about like the wrestling product. And, sometimes Vince can be a little, he can be like, I'm not going to have, Sting against Undertaker. I'm going to wait on that. We're going to have Sting against Triple H, and then we're going to have Sting against, and then before you know it, boom, Sting gets hurt, and it's like, dude, we were robbed of Sting and Undertaker. Like, we'll never get that.
Right.
We'll never get that, And it's like, it's kind of like, look, I love Roman Reigns, obviously, and God bless Roman Reigns, man.
Right.
I mean, for what that dude's been going through. But the storyline wise, for the last, like, you know, I don't know how many years, I mean, see, we're really trying to, like, shove him down the audience's throat.
Right. Yep.
And, like, audience really didn't like him. And even, I would say, even with Cena, there was a problem with Cena for many years where the audience was really, really split on him. You
right.
know?
Still is.
Yep. And it's like, you know, after a while, like, you kind of got to go with what the audience says, not with what you want, you know, you because the audience is going to, the audience dictated Hulkamania. Vince didn't dictate Hulkamania. It
right.
was like the audience, like the people created Hulkamania, you know? So that's why I think, like, you know, you got to, like, give the audience the payoff sometimes, you know, like, yeah, you got to, you know, build the Hulk and Andre, you know, feud, but you have to ultimately have Hulk slam Andre and pin him and beat him, you know?
Right.
Like, you can't just, like, keep extending these, like, these storylines. You have to eventually have Sting versus Undertaker, you know? You can't
right.
just, like, keep extending things and think you're gonna like, just, like, string, you know, the audience along, like it's the cartoon of the guy, like, with the carrot in front of the horse, and, like, the horse just
right.
keeps going,
yeah.
you know? Like, you have to eventually, like, the horse is eventually gonna learn, like, I'm never gonna get this carrot, you know? And I think that's after the Monday Night Wars, that's why a lot of fans kind of, like, jumped ship. They were like, okay, I'll stick with WWF for a while. And then it was like, kind of not getting anything. Like, we're not going to get anywhere here. And so, like,
right.
a lot of people were kind of, like, jumping ship, you know?
Right. And it's like an ocean. There's going to be ebbs and tides. So,
so anyway, okay,
yeah,
that was lesson number one. Lesson number two. And this is from Jesse Hernandez. This is his gospel. He always said, this is rule number one and lesson number one with him. If you're good to the business will be good to you.
Yeah.
And
Amen.
That advice, you can take it to anything in life. Like, you can take it to the work that you do. You can take it to your relationships, you know, your friendships with people, family, anything. You know, if you're good to something, like, that thing will be good to you.
Yeah.
And that includes the wrestling business. And you can't, like, I know of, like, some wrestlers that I kind of, like, came up with. One in particular that I'm thinking of that ended up being in the WWE. Like, he got a contract and he was so fucking despised. He was such a dick. He had such a chip on his shoulder that he ended up getting cycled out. And it sucks because he's a guy that was, like, 6'5", you know, like, a foot taller than me. And, like, if I had his height, it would have been me. I
right.
would have been in the WWE, and
yeah.
I would have had a career, you know? And, you know, instead it was this guy who, like, he just shit on everyone. He was, like, he could fucking care less about, you know, about the business, and, like, you know, he was just, he would go into business for himself, like, in the matches. And it's like, dude, like, you're going to get cycled out. You're
right.
not going to make it in this business. People are going to fucking hate you. And, you know, that's going to be your legacy. Your legacy is going to be, you know, Phenomenal Phil 15 years later calling you a dick on, like, some podcast, you know?
Like, awesome. Hey, Phil, this is DJ. We're getting close to getting ready to wrap up. And first off, I want to thank you for doing this podcast with us. I've learned a lot just from listening to this, and very interesting and entertaining. What I would like to ask you just to kind of end off is there anything that you want to promote or anything out there just for our listeners or people that are listening out there?
Everyone buys things on Amazon.com, right?
Oh, yeah. I'm heavy in it.
Okay. Everybody does. Jeff Bezos is the wealthiest man on earth.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys know. You can go to a website called smile.amazon.com.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? It's a program that Amazon does.
Mm-hmm.
And they donate, like, 1% of your sales to, like, whatever charity you want.
That's correct.
Okay? So I just encourage everyone that uses Amazon to, like, just go to smile.amazon.com and select whatever, you know, charity that that means something to them, whether it's, like, I don't know, the American Heart Association,
mm-hmm.
or American Cancer Society or the Boys and Girls Club of America or, you know, St. Jude's Children's Hospital, whatever. And just whenever you make purchases through Amazon, make sure you're doing it through smile.amazon.com so that, you know, you can be like supporting a charity year round.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't, it's like a no brainer. You don't even have to think about it. Just do it, you know? And True. So like every time I buy something on Amazon, I'm always like on my phone. I'm like, oh wait, let me go to my computer to do it real quick. So that's just what I wanted to tell everyone.
And before we wrap you up, you know, you say you're engaged and so forth. For the wedding, two quick things. One, I will text you my address for my invitation. Just make sure there's some vegan food available. And two, have you ever thought about having Ryan Katz conduct the ceremony,
yep.
seeing that he just did Kevin Kleinrock's, and I believe he's doing another one that I cannot mention at this time.
You know, all right, here's the deal. I would love to do that. My fiance would love to do that. The problem is, my cousin is married to a rabbi, and this rabbi has done everyone in my family's weddings, all right? So I'm kind of, like, stuck with him. But I would probably rather have Ryan, because I love Ryan so much, and he would make it so much fun, you know?
Yeah.
Not that my cousin-in-law wouldn't make it fun.
Well, you're going to end up having to do the traditional thing with the cousin and the family and stuff, and then with those of us you know... Through the
yeah, I'll have all of the ceremony for the boys.
Yep,
and then Ryan can officiate that.
In a ring, be awesome. In a wrestling ring.
Yeah, and
okay,
you know,
okay.
We'll invite Jake the Snake.
If I can get that white and gold suit that the Macho Man wore at his wedding, and like the and that hat that he wore, the cowboy hat,
dude,
I would do that.
I will totally. I have a couple great friends.
I need to get married in that. I need to get married in the Macho Man wedding suit. That's it.
If you all do right, it, you I got guys, it. I got a couple. I have a couple great female friends I know. I can get one of them. We'll sing.
Hello?
We will.
You get there.
Oh,
yeah. Hello.
Oh, did I lose you? All right, we're here.
Okay. Yeah. If you do that, I will have a friend of mine. We'll go and we'll sing together the song that was sung at the wedding. And you guys can do a Macho Man wedding, man.
Okay. All right. I like this. I like where we're going here.
I hope Melissa would like it as well.
But wait, Matt, I need you to be the ring bearer.
Better the ring bearer than the pall bearer.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Phil.
I need to do a wedding kind of like the Dynamite D Memorial, like Battle Royal.
Oh,
like,
wow.
All my wrestling friends dress as like retro wrestling characters, you know?
Wow.
That's what we need
to do.
That
would be cool.
That would be amazing.
Just don't ask me to be slick. But anyways.
Are you guys still there? You guys are breaking up, man.
Yeah.
My phone?
Who knows? But
okay.
I think.
How do you guys do this? Are you guys in like a recording studio? Or are you guys in a home
studio? Hey, you don't contact WWE Creative and ask them how they write Raw, do you?
we're
all in a bathroom.
We're in a
right
bathroom.
Now.
Yeah, we're
in
a bathhouse.
Right
now. We're
in the
all
bathtub.
In, we're
You're
all
the
in,
bathhouse.
Yeah, we're all sitting in robes and there's gay porn on.
Oh, so it's like a typical day at Matt's house. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Awesome.
Hey, Matt, I got to say something. All right, first of all, Matt Raven, obviously you guys are like longtime friends of mine. You guys, I never knew you guys were talented. You guys, no, you guys are good hosts.
you guys
are like money, man. Like Simon, are you as talented as these guys?
When I don't have a hoarse voice, I think I can be not called the how do we put it, young Padawan.
Phil,
I've been called around here.
You're learning from the best.
Phil,
these two guys.
I can smell the sarcasm all the way here in Vegas.
Oh, stop it.
I'm on the first flight back to L.A. to smell it in person.
With my ass.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Hey, yeah. Raven, we got to watch some pay-per-views, man. Like, we haven't done that in a while.
You know, I'd like to. I just magically appear at all of them.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to actually sit at home and watch them anymore.
He
but.
Can actually give you the keys to his place, and you can actually watch him on the pay-per-view
while you sit on my couch.
While you sit on his couch.
Right.
Oh, there we go.
But yeah, we'll get together, definitely.
All right, sweet.
No doubt.
And Matt, I will come out to Vegas soon and visit, man. I know I owe you a visit.
Yeah, definitely.
Cauliflower Alley.
Yeah, Cauliflower Alley is coming up in a couple of months here. So.
Oh shit, Matt, are you going?
I'm looking into it. Absolutely.
Oh, you got to go, man. It's the You'll best, be there. Dude. It's the best.
You'll be there.
So much fun.
Hey Phil, thank you again, man. And anytime you you come on, just let us know and we'll set it up.
Oh, absolutely, man. Love you guys, dude. Thanks so much for having me on, man. And thank you so much for keeping the wrestling world alive, dude. I really, you guys are what keeps it going.
Oh, we love you too, brother, man.
All right,
man.
There we go.
Take care, guys.
Later. Bye.